Wade Roy Lemons, WadeRowlemons.
It's my favorite fruit. And would you please state and spell your place of birth?
Scheller, Illinois. Scheller, Illinois. You know how to spell that. So.
Some people don't know how to pronounce it, but yeah. Almost everyone knows how to spell it. And could you state your date of birth?
July 19th, 1948.
Okay. Well, here we go. Okay. So before we get into your service, I kind of just want to do a quick little biography. Tell me about growing up in a smaller town.
Well, I was raised for the first 12 years. We had a farm out in the country, you know, with cattle and pigs and whatever. And then we moved to Cesar in 1960. And, you know, I was kind of a new thing to me because this is like a big city after living there with my brothers and sisters. That was the family element. Now there's real people hanging out that they related to me, you know. And that was pretty good. It was really nice around here. It was very laid back. We done what kids did, you know. We played till the streetlights came on and threw rocks up in the air to get the bats to dive and fished and hunted and all this stuff. It's just a pretty laid back life. In high school, you know, it got to be the cars and girls and try to sneak a beer in every now and again and just normal kid stuff, you know. There wasn't anything dramatic going on, actually, but it was pretty, you know, it was fun. That was the bottom line.
Kids nowadays, I mean, who even knows if they know what rocks are?
No, yeah, well, they wouldn't know what a bat was unless Ozzy had bit its head off, you know.
Tell me a little bit about your family.
I'm a member of my brothers and sisters. I have 8 brothers and sisters, 6 brothers and 2 sisters. I've lost 1 brother and 1 sister, so we're still 7 strong. And believe it or not, my parents lived together and survived for 67 years together until my mom passed, and my dad passed 3 years later. And we just, and I have 4 daughters. I was married twice. I have 3 daughters my first marriage, 1 daughter by my second marriage. And that's about my family. Of course, I have gazillion and 17 cousins and uncles. Don't have any uncles left. And, you know, we're a very large family, actually. We'll be fruitful and multiply. We lemons, and that's what we do.
like a Catholic rabbit.
Amen, brother.
Okay, yeah, great. So good. So we're talking about growing up in a small town, talking about family. What age were you that you remember when you first heard about the Vietnam conflict?
I was actually in high school. That was the first time I really started hearing about it. Was right, I think, my senior year in high school, because, you know, it was getting time for me to graduate high school, and some of my friends from the, you know, that graduated year before that me had already, you know, they'd signed up for the draft, and some of them are already in the military. Then that was the awakening and say, hey, guess what? And I didn't wasn't too much on the news, never was about the news, you know. And then it all of a sudden hit me, and I'm thinking, oh, wow. And then when I went and signed up and put my name in at the post office when I turned 18 years old, and they went up and took my physical and they classified me 1A, I'm thinking, oh boy, you better get ready to get the green jeans on, because it's going to happen. And it did. And, you know, I don't know, it was like surreal, you know. It was like watching combat on TV. It just didn't, you know, I don't know. It was just so far away, but, you know, that's not going to be nothing. But it was, so needless to say.
So you had a group of friends who were actually...
Right. You know, as we went through the years, there's quite several of the kids that went through high school. Not a lot of them went to Vietnam, though, actually. You know, some have one friend that spent his time at Fort Leonard doing what you're doing now. So I said, you lucky dog, you.
I was going to say, yes, that's...
Yeah, but it's just, you know, it's, everybody has their part to do, and so that's what everybody says. So I just went along, I just followed the program.
When you... So you did volunteer. You were not drafted.
I was drafted.
Oh, you were drafted.
Yeah.
Well, let's speak a little bit about that.
excuse me.
What were your feelings about the draft then?
I thought that's what we were supposed to do. I come from a long line of veterans. I have veterans all the way back to the Civil War in my family. You know, and that that's when your country calls you go. Without, you know, without hesitation, you know, I mean, it may not be, it might be the most politically correct thing to do, but that's what we did. That's what my family did, you know. I guess we were just volunteer cannon fodder, I don't know. But, you know, it was just what seemed the right thing to do. And, you know, at that time, I thought it was righteous from the stuff that I did watch on TV about what was going on there. You know, those poor folks need some help. I mean, maybe we're not the police force of the world, but still yet those folks needed help.
Is that what you were hoping to do?
Yeah, I was. That's what I was hoping to do. Make their lives a little bit better. You know, my, you know, give them a chance at democracy anyhow, you know, and because I know I was, it, I, you have to understand at the time I was born, from the time we went through school, it was, you know, Russia or Soviet, you know, USSR, we call it that. I get tongue-tied sometimes. But it was just like better red, better dead than red, you know. And old McCarthy and all these people were preaching this. And, you know, as a young personal child, you pick up on this stuff. That, hey, this is wrong. And I still believe it's wrong. But and I'll go to my grave thinking I done the right thing by doing what little I did for nothing, it seems like. But we did try.
Well, that was definitely a political motivation at the time to stop the spread of communism. You know, to try to export capital democracy for these nations, and I know that was in the hearts of a lot of people when they went over. What were you, I don't know if, even if you were told, but were you given any information about your mission before you went over?
Well, it went through basic and AIT, and when I went through basic training, at was about the 6 week in basic training, they offered me, if I would sign up for another year in the Army, I wouldn't be in the infantry. That was the option I had. I said, well, I don't know. At that time, I was newly married and had a small child, you know, and or were getting ready to have a small child, or baby, whatever you want to, most babies are little, but anyhow. And I was of that mindset, you know, if I'm gone 2 years, that's a year less than three, you know, so I opted out of that motivation, so to speak. And I, as I got, went to the infantry, that's what I did, so. And that was, you know, that was her spiel, you know, I will give you this, but yeah, you can have this, but you can't have that, you know.
Sounds like my mom. Let's do this. Before we really delve into your time over there, I'd like to get a little context of just that time period. The 1960s is just one of the most fascinating periods in American history as far as of what went on in this country, and let's talk a little bit. I have a feeling people my father's age, the baby boomer generation, almost everyone has an answer to this question, so I'll ask you. Do you remember where you were when President Kennedy was shot?
Yes, I do.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I was actually at the funeral home. I'd lost a niece that passed away from spinal meningitis. And I heard it there. Yeah, I remember that very well.
What was going through your mind when you heard that?
It didn't impact me that much because I had, you know, we had lived in our own little world, you know, and that was my grief, you know, because I'd lost my baby niece, you know, and it only brings a tear to my eye still yet. But then and the impact, and I seen it at a later date, like the next day, I'm thinking, holy crap, this is just not good at all, you know, it's. And I wasn't, I don't know, my family, believe it or not, were Republicans. My dad was a hard-headed Republican. It impacted him, too. We don't see anyone, you know, suffer that, you know, be killed just because of whatever it was. And who knows what it was till this day. Nobody does. Yeah, that's where I was at. I can remember just as plain as day.
You know, and as far as another question that really no one has an answer to, a lot of people have opinions, but let's get yours on it, because it is a hypothetical, it's almost a thought experiment. Had President Kennedy not been shot, not been assassinated, do you feel, and he of course would have been the Democratic nominee the following year, and you know, let's just say beat Goldwater, do you think the war would have progressed differently had it been
I really don't think so. I really don't. Honestly, I don't, because it was almost like it was cast in stone. It was laid out of, you know, I know Lyndon Johnson had an impact on it by all means, but I think he followed a lot of President Kennedy's mandates by, he was just following through with a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff he didn't, but still yet, you know, they were on a mindset all their own. And I think it would have probably gone about the same way, honestly. I might be wrong, but. And it was just the way the signs read, you know, how you get a mental focus on it, and that's what I think. But I might be wrong. But who knows? Who could tell? That is a hypothetical, you know.
Absolutely. Along that same line, obviously, LBJ was, you can make an argument that we had advisors over there under Eisenhower. You can make an argument that it started with Kennedy keeping that going. LBJ definitely put his stamp on foreign policy and definitely dictated the progression of the war during his presidency. What are your thoughts on LBJ?
I wasn't very impressed by him, honestly. He was didn't look honest to me. Just his outward appearance and the way, his demeanor, you know. And he just acted like he was sneaky or something, you know. Honestly, that's what I thought. And evidently he was. I've seen some of the repercussion, well, some of the, what we'll call it, blowback of being Lady Bird Johnson and selling stuff to the military and stuff like that. I might have got the wrong information, but I heard that in Vietnam, that sandbags were made again. I don't know if this is true, you know. This is only a rumor you know how rumors operate.
Yes, I do. Back from my high school days.
Excuse me.
Yep. Well, let's just follow this train for the next two. LBJ says he doesn't want to run again. He denies being the candidate for the Democratic Party. Richard Nixon wins on a platform of having a secret plan to end the war. In many ways, there is evidence that he tried as far as gradual withdrawal of troops. However, there's also great evidence that he exacerbated some of it. And I'm not saying that's either a good or bad thing, but just as far as increasing the number of bombings. How do you feel about when Richard Nixon got in office and he had control of the direction of the war? Your opinions on
I think in all sincerity, in my personal opinion, he was one to stop the war. But you know, when you draw a line in the sand, well, you can go here, but you can't go any further. And I think the bombing, I know it's war's hell. There's no way getting around it. And these poor South Vietnamese folks, they weren't really having all the best of luck either. But anyhow, I think yeah, I honestly was trying to do good. That might not be the right answer, but in my personal opinion, I do, because he sent us into Cambodia, and I'm telling you what, it had an impact. We got, well, that's probably later on in the interview, but it was, you know, it made an impact, and it did change, you know. Well, I got over in September of 69, you know, and it wasn't very long when things started happening.
You know, obviously, the only president to resign his office over, especially over third-rate burglary and sort of a thing like that. Do you think, because obviously Ford ended our participation, do you think had Nixon not resigned, had not gone through the Watergate scandal, had not resigned his office, had served his full second term, do you think the war would have had any different of a...
I think it would have ended quicker. I really believe it would. I do, because he was, you know, he wasn't, we weren't going to, not just, you don't slap my hand, I'm going to come up and kick your butt, you know. I'm trying to monitor my mouth because I have a, you know, an army mouth, so I'll try to keep that to a minimum. But anyhow, yeah, I think it would have, the impact would have been a lot different. But I might be wrong too. That's only speculation on my part.
course, and then we'll end with this president and this line, but of course, Gerald Ford got us out. Very divisive action on his part. Some veterans feel that if we just would have stuck it out a little bit more, we could have accomplished our goals. Some people felt we should have pulled out years before then. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think we were already committed. And when we turned all of the missions over to the South Vietnamese Army, and I don't know what was matter to those folks. We were fighting for them, and they didn't seem to have much interest in fighting. And I think if the American troops would stayed on the ground, I mean, as people say, we lost the war, but how do you lose a war and never lose a battle? The only closest thing to losing anything, it wasn't like Dien Bien Phu with the French. It was Quezon, and we held out, you know? I mean, that was one of the biggest impact. I mean, there was skirmishes, all like Hamburger Hill and stuff, but that's any war, you know? We still come out on top, you know? Sometimes the cost was dear, but those folks didn't have a heart to fight. I hope I'm not straying away from your question. And they just, you know, they seem to want to sit around the house, you know, and make babies and play in the rice paddies.
I've heard a very similar analogy used between that and perhaps the people of Iraq.
Right.
Needing to want it for themselves, needing to have their own Thomas Paine, their own Thomas Jefferson, their own John Adams there to instill that. And until, you know, they want it for themselves, how can we?
Yeah, you can only help people so far, you know, you can't, so to speak, live their lives for them. I know what you're saying. If they would have stood up, you know, I mean, it's going to cost you some, but still yet in the long run, you know, I think back, you know, I'm kind of a little bit of a history buff, and a good point in mind is in Warsaw, Poland, those freedom fighters fighting from the sewers, eating rats. If you have determination, you know, you may not win, but you're going to still try. And these folks were just very, very bad about not trying. They would bail on you. Please don't use that. And I might offend somebody, but that's just.
Oh, no, sure. No, that's a valid opinion.
Yeah, we were not everybody was gung-ho. Every person that I knew, our goal in life was to get home. And get home with as many of us as we could do. And that's what our job was. It was, you know, I mean, we had tactical missions and everything, but our priority was to get our butts back to this good old U.S. of A. And that's a fact.
My father says something very similar. That was his prime goal.
Yeah, that's
come back to his family. I mean, really, that was the main motivating factor. Let's go ahead and back up, and now we'll go a little chronological questioning here. So let's take it back to you were drafted, you entered basic training.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
That was a scary little thing. That's a transition in life that you have to be there to appreciate, you know. You're walking out there and you're just all, you know, it's all hunky-dory fine, and then all of a sudden the world falls on your head. My first experience of the real Army life was a duffel bag drill. I don't know if you know what that is. At Fort Leonard Wood, we lived in brick barracks. They were squad bays, so to speak. They were three stories high. And at the bottom, we stacked our duffel bags out in front of us. Then, at their command, we ran up those stairs to the third floor and put our duffel bags on the floor. Ran back down the stairs. You're too slow. Go back and get your duffel bag. You go back up there, and this went on. You know, this is the guy right off the street. I thought my lungs were going to explode. And it seemed like forever. And then we got assigned. That was like the first really encounter with military. I got there in the first week. I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I filled hypodermic needles with serum for, you know, all the shots that we were going to get. And, you know, it was kind of like I fell in between one of these basic training classes that was going to start. So evidently, there was several of us doing it, so there was a lot of people. I guess they were running people through, you know, 8 weeks of pop, pop, pop. But yeah, and then they'd run your guts out, and I learned a lot. I learned so much. I learned that I was stronger than what I thought I was. You can do a lot more than what you think you can when you're properly motivated. And a lot of it, you motivate yourself because, you know, nobody wants to be a screw up or whatever and have somebody point your finger. And you don't want to have your nose facing in the dirt doing push-ups the rest of your life. And that's what it seemed like, an eternity. And you done your best, strive to do good. And, you know, and I learned a lot. I learned my job, evidently, because I'm still here. Excuse me again. I have sinus trouble, and I apologize.
I do too. The spring is always the worst time of year for me. So you're in. You finish your basic training. You get the word. You're going over. Jerry actually asked me to ask you about the route you took to get to Vietnam. He said you had to.
Right. Well, see, I had a couple more stops before I went to Vietnam. I went to AIT at Fort Lewis, which is Advanced Individual Training or Advanced Infantry Training. Then I went to NCO school at Fort Benning. Then I went back to Fort Lewis again, and then I went to Vietnam. So that was a little, NCO school was a contributing factor, probably why I'm here today, because I learned another 12 weeks of you know, intense training in it, and they could say what they want to. If you know stuff, it's better than not knowing. We had a better idea of, besides that, the pay was better. I went over there as an E5, you know.
That never hurts.
Yeah, that's, it wasn't all that much, but still yet. And as far as my route, left from SeaTac Airport and flew to Anchorage, Alaska, at either Kadena or Yokota, someplace in Japan or Okinawa, one or the other, I don't know which, and landed in Cameron Bay. That's the route I took, going over. Coming back was just one stop in some place, Kadena or Yokota, I get them mixed up. Gosh, it's only been like 45 years, so, you know, I should be fresh in my mind.
I can't remember what I had for supper last night, so
yeah.
I'm very impressed that you're able to recall.
I think I had some Miller Lights for supper last night.
Yes, that's a good dinner.
No, I'm teasing.
And if this doesn't really stand out, it's not really a deal-breaker question. It's just something they would like us to ask. Before you were drafted, before you were in the military, before you went over, the media coverage of what was happening over there, do you believe it was fair, balanced?
As I said earlier, yeah, I was a young man. I didn't have time for the news, honest to goodness. I would prefer to watch Carol Burnett or so. I don't know what was on then, but still yet. You know, it just didn't seem that important at the time. The news coverage, I noticed it more when I came back from Vietnam. I guess I paid closer attention.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, they picked and chose their stories carefully, you know, and it was always, it seemed like to me, it was either we lost two, they lost five. We lost three, they lost seven. And it was all about numbers, it seemed like. It wasn't really about the impact that we were having or anything like that. It was more body count, I think. That's my own personal opinion. And then the war, like, we're never going to win this war. That's really very, 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 you know, that picks a fella right up off the ground, let me tell you, if you happen to hear that. And there were news broadcasts there if you had the opportunity to get back in the rear a little bit. We had TV programs, believe it or not. And we had a radio station, if you were allowed to risk it. But that wasn't working in the field because we didn't do that.
Okay. Do you think, I mean, now that you've seen the way our media had covered the first Gulf War, this recent investment in both Afghanistan and Iraq, do you see a marked change of how the media covers war between your generation and now?
Yeah, I do. Just the case in point, you know, a SEAL team landing on a beach in Iraq, and all of a sudden CNN's news is hitting them with cameras when they walk onto the beach. Now, that's just a little extreme. And I know there's always been reporters as far back as, you know, who knows. But this is getting a little bit up close and personal, I think. And but they still yet they're still, I mean, and they're still just editing what you, they show you what you want to, they want you to see. They don't show the whole picture, you know. I don't. I'm sure. I know news is not a documentary, and it's sensationalism. I know that's what to get the ratings, and that's the ratings wars. What it is. That's the way I see it. Iraq, Gulf War, and the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's a rating war. I'm thinking.
You've landed in Vietnam. Talk me through your first day.
First day, it was surreal. First thing that hit me when I got off the airplane was the heat and the smell. The smell was, it wasn't what I was used to, let me tell you. Landed in Cameron Bay. And Cameron Bay was sand. I've seen all these wooden pallets all over the place, right? And lo and behold, there were people there wearing black pajamas with little rice hats on. They were there, I seen them, you know? And then we, you know, we were here, there, and there, and messed around, and they had us, you know, we looked like, almost like cow barns is what it was, you know, we just sectioned off. And I spent one night in Cameron, and there wasn't really much happened the first day I was there. We were there, basically, and we found some beer, and we drank some. And then the next day, the following day, I was sent to so-called Cherry School in Bien Hoa.
Okay, what's
it was a seven-day, like a refresher course. You know, we being in the first cavalry, you know, repelling and stuff and squad tactics and what it, and just a basic, you know, just a, and I kind of give you a heads up what was going on, going to happen to you, you know. I mean, they kept telling you this, this, and this, and this. This had happened to this, and it, you know, it's always poor Joe Blow, you know, I always, and it, sometimes it's made up, but most of it was, you know, true to life stuff, you know, to give you an idea what you were getting into. And that was very, you know, if you pay attention to stuff like that, because, gosh, if you don't pay attention, you don't make it.
That's very true. That's very true. Talk a little bit, if you would be so kind, as maybe just, obviously you have more experiences out of this than you can probably even recall, but share with us, try to give us a feeling of what it's like to actually go out there. I mean, go out with your platoon and.
Well, it ain't Boy Scouts, you know. I'm telling you, and excuse me again, but anyhow, it was. I can remember what sticks out in my mind more than anything, is the stuff that we carried on our backs in that weather. I mean, it was a 90 to 100 pound pack on our backs with all the stuff that we carried, and it got into a routine. I mean, I wasn't in combat 365 days, I'd be lying. It was skirmishes here, there, and yonder. But still yet, I can remember how my shoulders felt carrying that damn rucksack. And that's why they called us grunts, because every time you get up off the ground, you grunted. And it was, you learned a lot of stuff, you know, how good sea rations aren't, and how good a hot meal every 3 days really tastes like, even if it's bacon and eggs. I mean, I'm telling you what, and you're eating out of a can, trust me, it's good. And it was, you had to change your whole mindset. You know, we ruled the daylight, they ruled the dark. So at night, it was, everybody got, how do you say this, really super alert. We pulled, you know, our positions. We had to guard ourselves, and light discipline and the noise discipline. You didn't try to make any noise. And you just got to be super alert. You always, it was 100% alert 100% of the time, because the terrain we were in, it was up close and personal, if you know what I mean. It was thick, and then you could walk right up on somebody, and if it was the wrong person, it might not be a good thing. So it was just like, bam, that, I use that in a literal sense, not, but you know, it was just there, and It was a big old camping trip, and I don't know if you ever camped, but this is not the best camping trip I was ever on. And there was bugs. You could sleep at night, and termites would eat your bedding or your air mattress, and you hear this terrible thing an infantryman hears at night is, because the termites done chewed a hole in his air mattress. He's going to be sleeping on the ground. And the vermin, the bugs, it was everywhere. I mean, mosquitoes, leeches, not a nice place to be. And that was the first impact that I got, you know, on any strange animal sounds at night. That was some dandies. There's less banshee squalls in the middle of the night, you know, and you know, whoa, we don't got this in Big Muddy Bottoms, you know.
My dad tells me that there were just so many snakes, so many, that he would cross a river and it just seemed the river was made of snakes. And there's just so many. And he has, you know, he developed, of course, a phobia, rightfully so, because of that. So let's say you're out on a skirmish, and as reports tell us, the North Vietnamese Army and the Viet Cong did do a lot of attacking at night. What was it like being out there, knowing that the enemy was out there? And,
well, that's where you know... I'm gonna say this: you got to have your ship wired real tight, and that's what, when you're dependent. We had guard positions, usually a squad position, and when you were on guard duty, you were on guard duty, and I mean to tell you, because you never knew. Honestly, we didn't ever get, not really, probe. They used to probe, you know, like fire bases all the time. They'd probe them, but out in the woods, they kind of left us alone at night. Because, you would have had to be a genius to get down through there without killing yourself. And we hardly ever moved at night for that reason, unless we had something to go on. But out in the field was the best place to be for me, because fire bases, they was all cleared out, and it was wide open, you know. And those guys know where they were, and they wanted them. They didn't like people there. They didn't like us there. They didn't like those artillery pieces there. And but that's like I said. You had to be alert, no doubt about it. But on the fire base, it's even worse, you know. You had to be stoked. It's all fun and games till somebody pees in the porridge, you know.
I'm gonna have to use that. Talk a little bit, if you would, about, because you touched upon this. I'd be interested to hear a little bit more if you could unpack it. It's a culture shock.
Yes.
When you go over there, and those are the words that my dad always used. It was a culture shock. You talked a little bit about, you know, first thing you noticed was both the oppressive heat and the unusual smells. What about the Vietnamese culture? Did you learn while you were over there? Good things, bad things.
I didn't know. You know, believe it or not, this may sound the only Vietnamese people I interacted with. Is when we pulled out of the, come out of the field. And I can see one little funny story, it may or not be funny to you. Coming out of the field, you've been out in the woods for 30 days, you're gonna be a little bit scuzzy. The first thing you want is a shower, you know, and that's just, you need one, trust me. But you don't notice it on anybody else because we all smell the same. Okay, get in it. This is my own personal, I'm in a shower house and I'm just scrubbing up, I'm soapy, and a little Vietnamese woman about this tall, I don't know how old she was, it was hard to tell, she may have been 36 or something like that. Me washing you back, G.I.? And I remember that today, no modesty whatsoever, you know, and that's their culture was not built on modesty, because they would relieve themselves on the side of the road. It was just, that's what they did, men, women, boys, girls, everybody.
Jerry was talking about too, that
yeah, that's
down in a rice paddy, and you'd see floaters come by.
Yeah, no, I trust me, I wasn't. The only rice paddies I seen was when I was down around Benoit. I was up north a little further. It was jungle. They had different crops up there, whatever they were, guava or whatever the crap that stuff was. They were hunter gatherers up there, and a lot of betel nuts. If you ever ask your dad about betel nut.
Okay.
Yeah, they chewed the leaves on this stuff, and it was black. It was like an opiate. It's like chewing coca leaves.
Yeah.
They'd get all buzzed up on that, and their teeth turned black. A bit old, pretty little girl gave you a big old smile with black teeth.
No, I know some girls locally. There wasn't, again, not saying that this is a question that you have to answer personally or say, you know, I did or didn't do this, but just maybe just give your opinion, because escapism was something that a lot of veterans tried to accomplish over there, some through drugs. You yourself?
Beer, no, really? Just beer. The situation we were in, You needed every bit of your wits about you. I swear, you had to be there. You know, you had to be 100%. And it goes back, you know. The escapism, I'm thinking, were people in the rear. And honest to God, I believe that. If I'm wrong, they had more time to do this. We had time to do that crap. You're hopping 10 to 15 clicks a day out in the bush. You ain't got time. Where are you going to get it anyhow? I mean, they ain't going to bring it to you on a helicopter. If you don't get it on a helicopter, you ain't got it.
I think it's a large part of a construct of Hollywood, too. Sometimes they,
right.
They overly...
Yeah, it's just like the movie Platoon. You know, that was the biggest comedy I ever watched, you know. We didn't shoot our own people, trust me. There wasn't plenty of other people out there to do that for you if they wanted that to happen. And trust me, that's my own personal experience. I'm not going to say it didn't happen, because people get crazy.
Well, it's
and the drugs in my, and I seen guys smoke weed in the rear, but they didn't do that in the field.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I didn't, but I'm a redneck. I'm from Southern Illinois. I didn't even know what the crap was, you know. What the hell are you doing?
There's a question on here that WTVP would like me to ask. And I think it's just more of a generic someone who was around then who may have experienced seeing it in the field or just know of fellow soldiers who had experience. But what did you know of the chemical napalm before the war? Did you know anything about it?
No.
Okay. Now, do you know anything about it during the war?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Could you talk a little bit about it? What is it?
Well, it's just like, napalm just jelly diesel fuel, and you detonate it, and it throws a big fire, and fire sticks to you and burns you up. That's what it does. That's what it is. And I wasn't real close to it, but you didn't want to. You could feel the heat in a pretty good way, because it's like... Well, I don't know if you ever built a brush fire and throw gasoline on it. I'm sure everybody has, and you get your nose hair singed and your eyebrows. Well, this is just, you could feel the heat from it, you know, and it was intense. And if you ever happenstance to run across somebody that's been in contact with it, you definitely know what had happened to them. And that's as far as I'd like to go with that, if you don't mind.
No worries. No, absolutely. Can you give us a, I tell you what, my dad, I mean, it's hard to say, can you give me a humorous story? We're in a war, there's not a lot of humorous stories. My dad talks about, he just thought it was interesting, kind of funny to him in a weird way that, you know, a big thing was keeping clean socks, that you had to have three pairs of clean socks all the time for every mission, and that was a big thing. Is there anything like that you could talk about, just those little things?
Yeah, everybody, yeah, socks were important. Let me tell you, during monsoons especially, I mean, you get up, you had about, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes after you're up, you had to get your chow in your belly, so to speak, eat a quick bite, and get ready for it start raining. So we'd move until about 11 o'clock and stop and eat and wait for it start raining. And this went on all day, and they had a little break in the evening. You ate real fast, get your hooch set up, and wait for it to start raining. And you got so miserable with socks, and you had foot powder, and everybody carried usually an M60 ammo can, had all their ditties in there, you know. I mean, this is private stock of everything you had. And, you know, since I was a smoker, I had cigarettes in there, and I had two pairs of socks. And those socks, and, you know, when you, and it may sound strange, but I didn't change socks till morning. Because we slept with our boots on. Because just that, you never knew. And it didn't happen, but you did. It could. It happened to a lot of folks. It didn't happen to us, per se. And you get up, and man, your feet would smell so bad. I'm telling you, well, you'd think you'd open a whole can of buttholes, let me tell you, when you pulled your boots off. And they were good boots. They dried out fast, but they had a lifespan of about 2 months. In the monsoon season, they would just flat fall apart. And that was the funniest thing, that everybody had foot powder. It looked like it's snow. In the morning, everybody powdering their feet. It didn't do it. It did some good, because I'm still walking, you know. But that's socks and Well, didn't wear underwear. We were all commandos. That would eat you alive, believe it or not. And that's where that foot powder come into, too. If you were a portly person, I wasn't very big, but some of the, you know, larger stature, there wasn't anybody fat there, honest to God. It was bigger people, and, you know, their thighs are bigger, and they rub together, believe it or not, and they get sore. And that's what happened with underwear. And we all, you know, a little foot powder on the inside of your thighs, and wasn't the most appetizing thing to see everybody doing, but by golly, we wasn't chafed, you know. And the best thing was on log day. I don't know if you know, that was, we get logged every 3 days, get food, water, supplies, ammo, whatever we needed. And I can remember every time the bannering over who was going to get what sea ration meal out of what, you know. And it, a lot of it we sent back. We lived on, a lot of us lived on peaches and pound cake or fruit cake. Some of that stuff was, it was all right. I mean, but it just wasn't all that after a while. But I could just see it now squabbling. I don't like that. Well, okay. And hopefully it would all work out. Most of the time it worked out pretty good, but the humor it was very hard to find.
Yes.
But you had to find humor and stuff. You know, I mean, it was funny. You see somebody fall on their butt and slide down a hill, and you kind of chuckle as long as they weren't hurt, you know, because you're probably going to be next, you know. If you ever try to, you know how slick, when you got a hill like this, and it's, well, it's just like this old red clay around here, only a lot redder, and it's slicker than goose knot, you know. At any minute, you could go on a skiing trip and not really want to. And that's kind of hard. You 160-pound a man, 90-pound a pack, or 100-pound a pack, that's a lot of weight. Inertia takes over real quick.
You touched a little bit about, and I, you know, almost every Vietnam veteran I've had the pleasure of speaking to and that who's shared stories always has a story about the weather, just being the extremes of every end.
Yeah, it's either hot and wet or wet and hot, it seemed like it. The dry season, you know, you get a rain, but it was, you get up and then it cool off, you know. I'm saying cool off. It might get down to 90 degrees, and believe it or not, it was cold. It felt cold. You would wake up in the morning shivering sometimes, and that just, it doesn't make any sense now, but I very rarely at this stage in my life, if I wake up and it's 95 degrees out, I'm cold, you know, unless I'm sleeping in a refrigerator or something like that. But it was just the monsoons, they were just, and they brought out every bug, every leech. Those leeches, I swear, I know you've seen inchworms, haven't you? Ask your dad about the leeches. If he'll tell you. They got in places they oughtn't to be. You know,
I can't imagine. No, and I mean, it's
yeah,
it's amazing, not only what you had to go through just in the situation of it all, but you add on top the weather and all these things. I mean, it's unreal, and it's amazing that you were able to, you know.
It was a survival situation, not only because you had people shooting at you. That place over there ain't fit to live in. I mean, I don't know how they do it. I would move. I'm telling you, I would. That place is just, but evidently they like it there. They wouldn't be there. They've been there for thousands of years, you know. And some of the oldest cultures in the world come in Southeast Asia, you know, in Cambodia especially. I don't remember their names offhand, but they abandoned that civilization, so, but I don't know. But on another, off the subject, call mountain yards. Mountain yards were like primitives. And if nobody mentions them, I think they were, these people were the bomb diggity. They had it made, they didn't need nothing. Although they were misused by probably both sides. They carried, their weapons were crossbows. They had elephants. They had, their women didn't wear shirts. Of course, that wasn't all that great anyhow, you know. Really hard to get all excited with a baby and a piggy on one side, you know, doing this. And they earned my respect. They were our American Indians, so to speak, or our Native Americans. I don't want to make anybody mad, you know. They've always been Indians to me, and I don't realize that. But anyhow, they were I want to interject that. Mountain Yards were this, the true people of Vietnam. I really believe they were. That's the way the whole country should have been, because they were primitives. It's like the Amazon, you know. Leave those folks alone. They're doing fine by themselves.
To take it back quite a bit, and this is always a touchy subject, and it definitely gets my dad's blood boiling a bit, but it's an important one to talk about, and that's the protesting movement that happened back home. Obviously escalating more and more as the years of the war went on. What are your just impressions of the protesters back home? I mean, obviously there's a full range of people who try to do it peacefully. There's, you know, the man who set himself on fire in front of McNamara's office, and a whole gambit of range in between. Do you, you know, we can talk about, did they have the right to do it? Yes, but, or no. If it is yes, do they do it in a proper way? What are your feelings about that?
Well, the protesters, you know, I understand, you know. I seen it a different light, and I am not going to bring my own personal opinion to it, but I can tell you, when I got ready to come home in San Francisco Airport, if you would have heard what those people said to me, I just come 24 hours prior to that, I'd been in a combat zone. I wanted to kill these people. They were just downright mean. Why? They didn't know me. I questioned, how many babies did you kill? I said, are you kidding me? I'm not a mass murderer. You know, just stuff like that. I did have a very low opinion of them, honestly. That's my own personal opinion. And probably my lowest opinion, I'm not even going to bring up a name, but.
Sure. No, absolutely. My dad was one who was spit upon when he came back.
Correct. And they just mean.
Yeah. You know, and they couldn't separate the politicians who were making the decisions from the servicemen who were really there just to do their job. And just to, you know, and it wasn't, you know, so yeah, I have similar opinions, mostly just from my father and what he told me. The protest did, as I kind of mentioned, they did kind of gain, I'm not going to say momentum, but they gained impactfulness, and not necessarily in a good way. I just rather mean that protests, you know, and not that there weren't peaceful protests at the end, but by the end of that movement, you had the Weathermen group who were blowing up government buildings. You had violent protesters as well. Do you think that, you know, and you don't have to get into any specifics if you don't want, but do you feel, and this isn't a freedom of speech thing, do you feel that they took it too far?
In, you know, any time, you know, that's the first, you know, the Bill of Rights, it got me meant to use with discretion. I mean, just because I can get up and I can say, you know, yeah, I can print about anything I want to, just, I used to be, but I wouldn't do it now, but I do believe when you take violence, violence never only begets violence, you know. When you go, you protest, okay, if it's a peaceful sit-in, fine, but these folks blowing up stuff, nah, it's the same thing in Iraq right now, you know. A terrorist is a terrorist, be here or there. As we see, they say, well, we're importing them, but I think they've always been here. In the 60s, they were here, trust me. They were blowing up stuff. I didn't like it, but it's the way it was. And then you have another movement that were the so-called hippie movement, the flower children. They were on a completely different spectrum. They didn't want nothing to do with anybody. But then they were all classified as hippies, and hippies got a bad name for these crazy bastards, so to speak. That's my opinion of them. They were just already looking. They were looking for something. They were pissed off at the world, and they were going to take it out on anybody and everybody, and not just the man. It was just innocent bystanders. When you blow up a government building, who's there? You know, it ain't just government people, for crying out loud.
Absolutely. Do you? Well, I tell you what. Let me throw out a statement at you, and then you can tell me if you agree with it or not. The statement would be that protesters today are better able to separate the soldier from the politician? Do you think that you're seeing evidence of that, that when soldiers come back from Iraq, they are having the same experiences as you, or they're having different
experiences? I think they're having different ones, because the only thing I'm seeing from my point of view is veterans welcome them home, you know, and I don't see all that many protests, only the, you know, at the funeral sometimes, but that's even counteracted now. You've got got these guys say, well, you know, you should have died over there. Then you got these old guys, these veterans we're taking care of our own, I think. And I think that makes a whole lot of difference when you got, you know, I don't know how many veterans there are in the United States, but there's quite a few of us. And these people that, I don't know what they're protesting about. I don't think war's good. I never would. War's crazy. It just don't help anybody. It takes people away. And I know we all justified, and so we can all justify what we're doing, but it all boils down to, it comes to the same conclusion. People die. And I don't know whether it be good people or bad people are still dead.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Personally, I think it's nice to see that our veterans are getting a better reception nowadays. Is it perfect? No, but it can't be any worse than what it was, because it was so bad for you.
It's hard to explain how you feel when you come back. Now, he's proud. I had my dress greens on. I had all, you know, I was decked out. I was looking good. Fine, lean green fighting machine. I come back and they took away all my self-esteem right there on the spot. Just by their bannering and yada, yada, yada. I almost seen red, and I just had to fight that feeling off, because, you know, I'm not there anymore. Over there, I could have taken care of that crap, you know. I didn't want to lash out and wind up someplace else, you know, but it was very, very, very difficult. And it makes me feel good that our troops come home to a welcome, you know. And it's, you know,
whether you agree with the war or not,
it doesn't make any difference. We're all tools. We have a function, and we all got a place to be in this earth. When our purpose is done, we're done. We all know that. I don't know whether you be pagan, Christian, or whatever, but we have a purpose to be on this earth. When our purpose is done, we're gone. And they've done their service of purpose. They're tools. We're all tools. It's just a fact. It comes down to machines. And they've done their job. They come home. They ought to get a pat on the back and a hot cup of coffee and a donut if they wanted. That's the USO. I had to throw that in.
Absolutely. What were some of the truths you realized about the Vietnam War and its impact?
The truths? Oh.
It's hard. What Jerry said, not to sway you, but you know, his answer to that was more of when we as a country make a commitment, we should follow through. And if we promise our allies support, we can't go back on our word.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much the basics. Pretty much what I would have come up with too, you know, and I could see how it could have been better, you know. The last two, at that time, the two wars previous, the war previous was Korea. They draw a line in the sand, you can't cross that. It's okay if they do, but we can't. If they would have, you know, fought the war as a war instead of but we weren't in war, because that was a thinking of a war, you know, I mean, it's crazy. And the truth I know about Vietnam, I'm home, I made it, and I hope, and I know 58,208 people or something like that didn't, and I'm glad to be here. And the impact of the war on me, I grew up, but I think I lost my little kid in me too. I try to hunt for him still yet. But I don't know. I don't have a definitive answer. I know we could have done better. You know, if we had to support, had Congress supported us instead of, well, the political wind flows this way, so we've got to follow this wind, and therefore, you know, that and they kind of cut off your lifelines, so to speak, cut your one string at a time, you know. little bit as it goes along. I mean, you know, if it's not like it was World War II, and Korea was the same thing, and nobody wanted to be in Korea, for crying out loud. That's a colder Vietnam, what it all amounted to. And it is a World War II, you know. I mean, they had the whole support of the nation. They had people out banging, you know, hey, banging on the doors. Hey, we need your tires. We need this, that, something else. And the whole force of the United States of America pulled together.
My grandmother was in New York, and her family actually did very well during World War II because they owned a honey farm, and since sugar was rationed, they were able to do extremely well during that time. But yeah, sugar, rubber, so much. Yeah,
I know that strayed from the point, but that's, you know, I mean, that's the difference in the time. If the whole country would have backed us, per se, and that goes back to protesters and everybody that didn't want us there, I'm sure that war would have changed the whole way, but that whole different way, you know. Because people, after a while, it's just like, we're there, and it got to be not so much a mission, it was get home. That's the bottom line. Yeah. You get to call short-timer syndrome. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
No.
Everybody carries a short-timer's calendar. It'll be whatever, a picture of what it was. You take a pen and you color it, and every day you start out about 60 days. And you start 60, 59, 58, 57. You get a whole picture colored, and you got a big yay. Go home. Short-timer's calendar. I bet your dad had one.
That's interesting. I'll have to ask him. That's very interesting. Very interesting. Well, the harder questions I like to save towards the end, just because... And before I ask these things, I do like to share a story just to let you know that... you know, these things affected my family as well. Not that we were any more affected or less than anyone, but my father talks about they were attacked at night. It was a night raid, and they were surrounded. They were just getting enemy fire from all directions. And my dad could. It was so dark, and there was just so much noise. He could not tell really which direction to shoot fire. So he was doing his best, and he saw a man with a gun coming towards him. Soon, this is the enemy shot. It was his friend, and the friend did not make it because of that. I know the answer to this question, but I have to ask it as naively as I do. Did you know people who lost their lives over there?
Did lost their lives? Yeah, I do.
Friends, people in your...
Well, there's people in my real close proximity. How's that?
And again, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but could you speak a little bit about that?
I can't.
Okay, sure.
That's after a lot of psychoanalysis and I suffer from PTSD, yeah. And I just prefer to leave. I know if I cut you short, I'm sorry, but
no.
I can't do that. I can't open that. I can't open that door.
And we're going to skip right over it. No
Thank
worries
you.
Whatsoever. No worries whatsoever. How are you doing with your PTSD, your post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, I got diagnosed in this 2008, but I was reluctant to go to the VA because, in my mind, if I'm getting stuff from the government, it's taken away from somebody else. And I got myself straightened out on that down there. They told me, you dummy, you know, and it helped me a lot, you know. We all deal with situations differently, and I tried alcohol first, and it didn't work, and just messed up. It's hard to explain how it is. I don't even know if there is an explanation. I don't even know how it is.
When we self-medicate, I think sometimes.
Yeah, that's it. It wasn't any more than a lot of beer, but it got to be a real ritual, you know. And I was always angry, it seemed like. I don't know why I was mad, but I was mad. It was just those bad dreams keep you awake at night, you know, and come back and haunt you. And therefore, that's why I say, no, I can't do that.
Absolutely. No, I understand completely. I really do. Say I'm an 18-year-old, and I'm watching this at home for the first time, and, you know, I know the Vietnam War, but this has helped me learn so much more about it than I ever would from a textbook or just You know, I'm really hearing life stories. What would you want me to take away from this? I'm an 18-year-old kid. I might join the military soon. My life's ahead of me. I don't really know where I stand politically. What lesson can I gain from your experience?
Oh, that's, well, be smart. You go to school, learn all you can. Because, you know, if you're smart, sometimes you got ways of getting out of stuff, you know. You know, you gotta make do the best you can with what you got to do with. And we're all basically 18 to 66 like I am, we're all survivors. We all want to survive. And the better tools you get to do survival, that's the more life you're going to have. That's all I got to do. And that's about all I can say. I just think you got to be yourself and be the best you can. And I know it's not the army of one. That's not even what I'm trying to say. But it's just we got to be the best that we can be.
Absolutely.
Because it's a fast-moving world. And the technology that I've seen in my years is just...
amazing. I still don't know how to work my phone accurately.
Yeah.
Well, Wade, I really thank you so much for this. You've really shared a lot from your heart, and I know it's the, you know, this is a very difficult topic. It is, and I want you to know how much I appreciate what you've done today. This is not easy, but I want you to know that what you've done today is going to make a difference, and I think people are going to benefit from hearing you. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
And I thank you. I thank you for having me because of the simple reason we can actually talk about this stuff now. And a lot of years I didn't want to talk about it. I can now.
Sure.
You know, up to a point, but I even have my limits. And I thank you for having enough interest in it, you know. And it's gotten this way. I'm just going to interject this in my little final whatever if we're done. I have so many people, and this I don't know what happened in the last 5 years. I walk in Lowe's. A man stops in uniform, I got a hat on like this, and shakes my hand. And he's wearing war patches from Iraq, and he thanks me for my service. And civilian hollering at you off the street, they see a hat, hey, thank you for your service, brother. I said, my God, what happened? Where have these people been? It's just an awakening, I think. And
isn't that nice?
It is. It feels good.
It
really does.
It's
have
180.
Yeah. It's just like daylight and dark. Before, you know, I wasn't going to wear no hat like that. You've been to Vietnam, damn, what's the matter to you? But now it's all well and good. I think maybe all the people in the 60s, the protesters, have gotten older or something, or killed themselves or whatever. I don't know. I mean that in all jest. Yeah, they've grown up, I think, and really can see that their opinion was valued, but it wasn't everybody's opinion is like, it is what it is.